All right, welcome everyone. How are we all?
We're fine.
Last session, everyone's awake, right? We're going for the post-lunch brownout, right? So you've had lunch, it's sitting on your stomach, you're all gonna... I'll try and keep you guys awake. What we're gonna be doing is this. You're in the right room, okay? I assume you've all read that, made sure you're in the right room. Last talk of tech ed, are you excited? Or are you just worn out? We're worn out, right? Yeah. All right. Because the keynote's coming up straight after this, I will try and get you guys out of here a few minutes early. I'm going to try and aim for about an hour instead of the full 75, so that you get down there and you can queue out the front and try and get the best seats and get the IT pros out of the way. IT pros in the room, who did I just offend? Sorry. One person. All right. So what we're going to be doing is running through this. I'll just give you a bit of a background on myself, because you're all excited, right? Who is that Richard fella? That's me there. Isn't that wonderful? Would you like me to read it to you point by point, or would you like to just read it for yourself? Probably this one's the most important thing. I'm a Scrum trainer with Scrum.org, so I do Scrum for a living, as well as Visual Studio and TFS and architecture work and a bunch of other stuff, but I do a lot of Scrum work, so get to experience this day to day with a lot of teams, helping teams transform from the traditional waterfall process, or no process at all, as it often turns out, into something a bit more organized, trying to get teams to become more dynamic and efficient. What we're going to be doing today is looking really at Scrum in the context of how the TF service works. So this is not TFS on-premise, this is the hosted service, and using just what's hosted in that TF service, how do we do Scrum well? How do all the various roles, you know, product owner, dev team, Scrum Master, how do all those roles fit in with the service? How do they interact with it? And basically try and do a very, very quick sprint showing all the various aspects. So not just sprint planning, not just backlog management, but also, you know, some dev work, code and so forth. We're going to be doing it in the context of an application built on Nancy. Anyone heard of Nancy, by the way? One, two people. Awesome. Okay, so Nancy's a web application framework, a bit like MVC. Very, very simple way to build web applications, so proving that you can build ASP.NET web apps using something that doesn't come from Redmond. It's true. And we'll do that. All right, so Scrum. Who's using Scrum? All right, Kanban people, couple. Guys who are doing other things, waterfall-type processes, one person owns up. And everyone else, you're all cowboys, is that right? Yes. Just yeehaw! Horsey dance for Psy, all that sort of thing. All right, so Scrum, for those who don't know, this is your quick overview of what it is. We start off with a product backlog, owned and managed by the product owner, the single wrenchable neck who's in charge of the product. And we say wrenchable neck because they are the single decision point. And if they screw up, it's their neck. They have a list of requirements and desirements, things they want to get done. They then build that up, order it, talk to the development team, and the development team then pulls in work for them to do. Fair enough, we know this. And they say, we think we can forecast that we're going to get this amount of work done inside a sprint, which is a 2 to 4 week period generally. 4 weeks is the maximum. You can go shorter. I often like to do 1 week sprints just because I like hurting people. And then the team comes up with a plan, which is our sprint backlog. They then work on that. Each day they have a coordination meeting at the daily scrum, 15 minute maximum, where they're just figuring out who's doing what, how do we progress ourselves towards the end goal of delivering an increment of the product. Okay, fairly simple and straightforward. At the end of that, we have the review where the team's looking at what they've built and checking if it's built correctly, if it meets the acceptance criteria, if the product owner is happy, the product owner accepts the work, we're happy. We also have a retrospective where we now look at how we built. So the review is the what do we build, and the retrospective is the how we built it. Who does retros, by the way, for those doing Scrum? Yeah, see, that's a lot fewer hands than those who are doing Scrum, which is a bit of a sad sign. You need to be doing your retrospectives because that's your continuous improvement point. That's how you as a team become more efficient. And then we roll out of that straight into another sprint. Fairly straightforward. All right. When we talk about Scrum, we generally talk about cross-functional teams. You know, the various skills that we have that we are going to need to build software. So we have the BA type stuff and UI, UX, architecture, coding, and so on and so forth. Don't confuse this with job descriptions. These are skills the team needs to have. I really don't care what label you put on someone. As long as they've got the skills to do the job, that's what you need in the team. So you don't need a BA in your team. You need people with business analysis skills. You don't need testers in your team. You need people with test skills. Now, it helps to have specialists or people who are strong in those areas, but the team needs to have all the skills. What we'll cover today isn't going to be all of that. For example, the service doesn't really help you in terms of architecture, because what do you need for architecture? You need a whiteboard and a pen so you can draw boxes and lines, maybe Visio if you want to be professional. And that's about it. You don't need a lot for documentation because you just use Word or Wiki. Who uses Wikis out of curiosity? Good. That's actually good. I find Wikis a lot better than Word documents because they're not as likely to go stale. And Word documents aren't exactly discoverable. Put it in a SharePoint folder or somewhere in a magical folder on the file system that everyone will just remember. Yeah, that works. And infrastructure and ops we're not going to cover because the service doesn't have that integration with SCOM yet. So with TF on-premise, we can actually hook up SCOM to it so that when the ops guys run into issues in production, they can actually raise work items back into the Team Foundation server. We don't have that at the moment. So that's what we're going to cover. Very cool. And this is our roadmap. So as I said, we're going to go through a very quick sprint. I'm going to move fairly quickly through a lot of this, so seatbelts on. Backlog management, sprint planning, the sprint itself, we're going to be talking about those activities there. Bit of deployment automation, so I'm going to push our Nancy website to Azure using a Git repo. And then we'll do a review, retrospective, and so forth at the end. And then we'll talk a bit about Kanban. Now, we're not going to cover Kanban a lot through it. We're going to spend most of our time in Scrum because the Scrum process deals with a lot of what Kanban covers anyway. And we'll talk about the differences at the end and some of the specific features in the service that support Kanban. All right. So with that in mind, let's get to it. Ta-da! All right, there's our service. All right. We've all seen this, yes? Who's playing with the service at the moment? Okay, on-premise TFS, 2012, 10, 8, 5, 1, 8 still, okay. All right, so for those who are using 2012, obviously this is fairly familiar, this type of dashboard and the landing page. Let's just go straight to backlog management. So pretend I've got my product owner hat on now. And I go here to view backlog. And I wait for the network connection. Is that font size okay? You want a bit larger? Is that all right? Makes it really hard to see now, of course. So I'll just drop it a little bit. All right, so we're here in the product backlog. Now, as a product owner, here's the thing with Scrum. A lot of teams expect their product owner to be a secretary and to create all the backlog items themselves or to write them themselves and so forth. That's not the job of the product owner. Job of the product owner is to describe the vision of what they want. It's up to the development team to go and create backlog items. Did you know that? Most teams don't. They expect the BA somewhere else to write it potentially, then get it handed over. But it's really the development team's job to do that, to take whatever the product owner is describing and put it into a product backlog item, which can be as simple as something like this. I want to do stuff. Wow, that was awesome, wasn't it? And we would then move that around the product backlog. And as you can see, we've got this little drag and drop, which is great. And if I want to nest items, I can drop it over here. You can see it goes green, and that gives me that product hierarchy. And it then nests in there. And I can take another one, such as demo great stuff to a tech ed audience, like so. And that also gets inserted. So we can get this nice hierarchy of product backlog items. Anyone use Jira at all? Jira by default has just that flat view of backlog items, as you might be aware of. It sucks. If you want to use Jira, you'd be needing to go and buy a thing called Structure. It's a plugin that gives you that sort of stuff. I'm not plugging it by any chance or any stretch, by the way. I think Jira is okay. I prefer TFS because of all the other bits that it offers around that. But as you can see, this is here out of the box. If I want to undo that, I just drag it down and it goes flat again, which is cool. When I'm doing Scrum, as a product owner, I need to be looking at my various product backlog items and saying, are these things ready for a team to work on? So if you look at the Scrum guide, it says, don't let the, you know, make sure the product owner's got these things ready for action. So when you go into sprint planning, product backlog items should be ready for action. That item that I just added, I want to do stuff, is not ready. It doesn't have any description yet. It doesn't have any acceptance criteria. So I'd need to go and add some of these things. Once I do, I would then have something like this, where I've got, you know, as a presenter, I want to learn how to type so that I can show things to people out looking like a fool. And yes, you can see my typo. I run the session and get 5-star evals from all you guys. You can pre-fill in those evals, by the way. I don't mind. It's not a problem. Do that now if you've got Wi-Fi. And we set the state here to approve. So the product owner is doing this, approved, and you can see the description there, approved by the product owner. That means now for sprint planning, this is ready to go. So in terms of backlog management, this is what I'm as a product owner doing working with the development team. We should be looking at things like making sure we've got effort. Story points is generally what most teams use, though you can use things like ideal days if you wish. Business value, up to you, and then go from there. You'll also note that we've got things like tags up here, and you would have seen this potentially. No, you wouldn't because I had my font size zoomed in too much, but we've got tags that we can add to product backlog items or bugs down here, for instance, indicating a little bit of metadata around these. It's a nice, simple way of grouping things versus using the area paths, okay? So feel free to use those in the service as well. All right, so now we've got a product backlog. As you can see, we've got sizes on things. We've put some effort into cleaning things up. This one I'm not happy with. I'm going to move that down a bit because that really shouldn't be there yet. We've got a few sprints to sort that one out. What's next? We go into sprint planning. So now we're going to be in the room. We're going to sit down. And generally, we do this with the projector up. Who does sprint planning with a projector? Some form. What do you guys do if you don't do sprint planning with a projector? How do you do sprint planning? Just cards? Cards on post-its on a wall? Okay. Where it becomes advantageous to use a projector is generally a product owner will be talking about things and adding some clarifying information. And they'll generally pop something up on screen to talk about things that they're saying, you know, I want it to look a bit like this, or I want something else. Or you'll have UI mock-ups that you've done with either PowerPoint storyboarding. Anyone use that, by the way? Storyboards, you haven't seen that? Okay. Or Balsamiq or one of those type of tools. And it's just useful to go through in sprint planning as a refresher of what the UI is expected to look like, for example. When we do, we'll go into the sprint and we'll take an item such as this one here, which is approved, and we can simply drag it up to the sprint. I know it's pretty complex. And then I go to my sprints, and you can see I've got one in progress. I'm kind of cheating a little bit here. And I add that in, and I now say, well, this is the one we're looking at. It's approved. We better actually switch the state to committed, saying that the team has now forecast that they're going to be able to do this in the sprint, and they pull the work in. What then happens? So if you think about sprint planning, we generally talk about it as two-part meeting. First part being pulling in the work and doing a forecast around what's there and setting a sprint goal. And then the second part, figuring out how to do it, developing the plan for the work. If you look at the latest sprint guide, that distinction between a part A and a part B has been removed. It's now let teams figure out how best to do that. They've got to get a forecast done. They've got to come up with a plan for what they're doing, but we don't have to do that distinct part A, part B anymore. I still recommend it because teams will, if you do that, you force the time boxing around figuring out what to pull in, and I find that teams that don't do that tend to run over and then they don't plan their sprint very well. Once we do, very straightforward, we simply go and start adding some items. So we've got, you know, task one, we put in a remaining work estimate, which might be, you know, 2 hours or whatever it is. I might decide this relates to a particular activity. You know, this is a piece of development work, it's whatever else. You'll note we don't assign that work straight away. Don't assign work in sprint planning. Just let it happen. Figure out what needs to be done and then let people sign up for work. Same as we do in the sprint planning where the team pulls the work in from the product backlog item. When it comes to the sprint itself, let individual team members pull the tasks that they're going to do. It avoids bottlenecking and it helps force the team to think about how the team as a whole is acting instead of, I've got my job, I've been assigned my work. I will work with my blinkers on and screw you, rest of the team, I've got to get my stuff done, otherwise the boss will beat me up. Anyone had that experience? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. All right, so let's save and close that. All right, so there it is, pops in. Now, what's handy to think about in sprint planning is where you might potentially be bottlenecking. So again, if you think about the fact that you've got specialists in a team, you might have a DBA or you might have a UI guy who really knows the JavaScript really well and everyone else is a bit average at it, so you tend to bottleneck on particular skills in the team. You can use this section here on the right, work details, so you can just toggle that on and off. And that will show what activities we've got. So we can see we've got 2 hours of development and 4.5 hours that are assigned, and we can see who's got work assigned to them, which is kind of nice. Where this becomes even more useful is if I go to my capacity for the sprint and I say, in this sprint that Richard here has 4 hours a day capacity because he's a bit of a slack ass and doesn't do work, whereas the IAM programmer, he does full hours of work a day. What? And Richard doesn't do that. He does documentation because he's useless. And then we can see as a team now, we're starting to get these charts showing up, the bar graphs, indicating how we are on our capacity. Quite handy. And I can also add days off, so I can say, you know, I've got a particular day this week which I'm not working or whatever it happens to be, etc. So we can take time out. Very useful if you've got that sort of constraint and you're worried about it. More useful for longer sprints than short ones because generally you can talk it through fairly quickly. But if you're doing a 3 or a 4 week sprint, I'd recommend you think about using that. All right, and then of course you have to save it. Don't forget to save. Okay, so where we're at. Sprint, product backlog management and sprint planning. So we've done that now. Fairly simple, fairly straightforward. What next? We go do the daily scrum. Now, the daily scrum, if you think about it, or if you listen to what people talk about, is generally these questions, correct? You guys who are doing this, you probably ask these questions, and it gets kind of tired after a while. What did I do yesterday? What slowed me down? What am I doing today? If you're doing those questions, you're doing it wrong. In fact, the scrum guide's changed recently. Don't do those questions. The problem with these questions, the way they're phrased, is they're all about me as an individual. What did I do yesterday? What did I do? What am I doing today? What slowed me down? Where's the consideration for the rest of the team? Again, it forces this blinkered mindset. It might be subtle, but it does happen. And you see what happens in a stand-up. You know, we've got the task board there potentially, or a big screen, and the team's going through in a bit of a semicircle talking about what's happening. The person who's talking is engaged, and everyone else is doing this. My phone's here, that's interesting. Well, look, a bird, a squirrel. Don't do that, okay? So what we want now is to think about how do we as a team work? How are we as a team progressing? So the questions have changed. What did I do yesterday to help the team meet the goal? What slowed us as a team down? So if I get slowed down, that affects us as a team because it's reducing our capacity. So how are we slowed down? And what am I doing today to help the team meet the goal? Not what am I doing today according to my job description, according to the task that I've picked up and so forth, but what am I doing to help the team? I might have individuals in the team who don't actually pick up any tasks at all. And instead, they spend all their time pairing with other people, working with the rest of the team to do mentoring or training or whatever else, code reviews, I don't know, all sorts of things. They won't have individual tasks, but they're all helping the team. So focus on those, okay? Another thing that I would love to do, by the way, anyone seen this? This got announced a couple of weeks back by a company called Ubi Interactive. And basically what they've done is they've got a projector and a Kinect for Windows, bit of software on a PC, and they mount the Kinect up on the roof or on the floor, And it will take a projector like this and turn it into a touch screen. Ooh, so sexy. Oh, yeah, I want, as you can tell, I want one for Christmas. So if anyone's thinking this is a good talk and wants to buy me a Christmas present. So, yeah, you basically stand here and the thing does some syncing to figure out where the edges are and then turns the whole surface into like a 100-point touch screen. Awesome. So you can then take, jumping back to here for a minute, your sprint and do when you do your sprint, daily scrum, sorry, and you jump to the board, I can go, I was working on that, and just drag it across. Maybe I just like toys and gimmicks, I don't know. But it's much nicer than doing that, isn't it? But that's really what's going to happen, okay? So we move tasks around, we assign them. You see, once I pick this up, I now need to assign it to myself. So that's me. I need to say, well, this one here I've actually finished, so I move that across. As I do so, you'll also see the sprint up here, the burn down chart changing. So if I look at that, you can see there's my burn down at the moment, which is cool. And I'm going to change this number here and make it something else. Let's say that's 8 hours. The IAM program has struggled. And you see immediately this has jumped up. Okay? So you're seeing this live update to what's going on, which is cool. If you've got on-premise TFS, you can get a plugin to also effectively hook this up with SignalR to auto-refresh. There's a plugin from a guy named Tiago Pascal who's got one you can add to your on-premise TFS. You can't do that with the service because there's no support for plugins. So for those, you'll just have to hit F5. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. All right. So daily scrum, 15-minute thing. We go through. We figure out what we're doing. If we need to add extra tasks, which does happen, we can simply come in here and, you know, do what you would expect, extra task. Put it in. I haven't set any hours on that. I better do that, whatever it happens to be. Okay? Fairly straightforward. All right. I should mention one thing. Back when I was talking about product backlog items, I forgot to mention features. You see this one up here? Has anyone played with this yet, out of curiosity? So the idea behind, anyone heard of an epic? Yeah? Don't use that term. I hate that term. It's just a larger story. But the idea is that in terms of managing a product backlog, you can manage it at different levels. Conceptually, you've got a large, high-level view of what you want your product to do. And this is generally what we talk about with the epic stories. They're big things that are too big to fit into a sprint. But that product owners and business people generally talk about, you know, I want my admin systems, I want to do my payment processing, I want to do whatever it happens to be. These are large stories. You can work those into TF service by using features and then map those features to the smaller level product backlog items. No problem at all. So for that, just to jump back very quickly, if I go back to my backlog items here and look at my backlog, and I go over here to mapping, turn that on, I've got my features. I haven't got any features yet, so let's just add one quickly. So I'll jump over here, a new feature. Isn't that creative? And I shall jump back over to here with my mapping, and I'm simply going to say that item there is related to that feature. If I change my view over here now to say, show me backlog items to features, we'll see that that component registration is now part of a new feature. Very straightforward. And then I can go back to my normal backlog view, like so. And if I go here to my features and I do the same sort of thing, I can view features to backlog items as well, and I can see how my larger features are being broken up into smaller items. At the moment, the service only offers two levels, features and backlog items. The team is thinking about multiple levels, but it's not going to be there yet. Question? Can I have a backlog item as part of two different features? Good question. You ready? Remember that all work items in TFS are simply links. All right, so there's my other feature. And I go over here to mappings and, screen refreshed on me just as I dragged it across. All right, so let's go back to my features and change my view. Ooh, interesting, huh? So it changes the mapping. Okay. So even though they're just link types, it'll break the old link and set up a new one. I haven't actually tried going in and manually setting the link to the second feature. We could do that, but I don't want to take the time at the moment. All right, where were we? Okay, so back to here, doing the daily scrum. Was there another question? Sorry.
I'm just interested in what your opinion is of the features from the development team's point of view. Do they actually manage those through, because I noticed that feature had a state.
Yep.
Do they, or is that the product owner to sort of put that feature through until it's done? And, you know,
so the question for those who didn't hear it is, does the development team, my awesome grammar, manage the states in the features? So if we go back to features here, and I look at this one here, we have some states here, new, done, in progress, removed. Does the development team or the product owner manage that state transition? What would you do? Who says development team? Product owner? It's actually both. As the development team pulls in the product backlog items and works on it, you could say the feature is in progress, but the only person who should really set the feature to done is going to be the product owner, because they own it. Make sense? Same as in product backlog items. Who moves it to the committed state? Who moves it to the done state? You know, the person who clicks the button isn't so much the important one. It's who gives the nod to change the state. Again, the product owner is going to be the one who should set a state to done for a product backlog item. All right. Where were we at? All right, let's jump back very quickly. What we're going to do now is just run through the team part. So we've done sprint planning, so forth. We've kicked off the sprint. We've got some stuff to do now. How does a team collaborate? One of the important things in Scrum is teams that communicate. Most teams that do their first sprint and do their first retrospective, when they talk about what they can improve on, what's the number one thing they talk about? You would have experienced this when you first did yours, if you did it. Communication and understanding the requirements, both of which really come down to collaboration. How do team members collaborate with each other? How do team members collaborate with the product owner and clarify things mid-sprint? Collaboration is important. And then we'll talk quickly through source control with Git that we're doing, code quality and testing. Alt-tab I was about to do. Let's do Alt-button. Right. Right. Okay, collaboration. If I go to the home of my project here, you'll see down the bottom, I have team rooms. Yep. I can have multiple team rooms. These are effectively chat channels. You might think, well, why do I need a chat channel when I'm just within my one project? We do this within Redify very regularly. We have teams who sit literally within spitting distance of each other. Not that they would. It's a bit gross and there's electrical equipment around. But they will still use a team room because they want to have communication that's non-disruptive. So when you have verbal communication, it's generally about a point in time thing and it's between two people. Help me with this and so forth. Versus communication that you want in kind of more an asynchronous broadcast mechanism, and a chat room is great for that. It's also great for teams that are distributed, obviously, because, you know, out of sight, out of mind often occurs. If you've got distributed teams, show of hands, distributed, you know the problems, yep. If they're not on site, you kind of forget about them. Whereas the team room actually gives you this idea of presence. So I can see who's actually in the room at this point in time, who's working and doing whatever it is they need to be doing. So if I look here at this one, just do that. I have a team room here. I'll just drag that across. And I have another guy, the IAM programmer, is logged in on this one over here. And I shrank that for a reason. And, you know, we obviously can chat away. Yes, we can. And so forth. And we can see that happening. So this is a SignalR-based chat room, live and so forth. But you see also we've got these events occurring. So I've got a whole bunch of events that I can manage inside my team room that help me communicate about other things? What are those other things, you ask? Good question. So build completions, the best one. I love this one because the build happens, the build fails, everyone jumps in the team room and goes, ha ha, and points fingers and starts blaming people because that's how teams operate in Australia. We love abusing our other team members. So we've got that. I can say, show me anything that's in here built and deployed by anyone or by just room members. So I've got that. Or I've got code changes, so I can see when people are checking in code and so forth. I can see when people are updating work items. Be aware this one gets noisy. If you're using work items at the moment, this gets really, really noisy. A lot of work item updates with state changes, they'll all turn up in the chat room, which is a bit of a pain. Hopefully the team will come up with a way to filter that sometime soon. And code reviews, which relates to the code review work items. So if you're using TF version control instead of Git, which this project's using, you can use the code review items, and they will create work items in the process, and they'll drop in specifically into the room. So basically, I need a code review, here it is, someone can click on it and then process it, which is cool. All right, so that's there, and you can see these obviously jump out to the work item itself, which is great. Back to where I was. Now, I can also do, ask me about number 280. What's number 280? I don't know. One of the issues with trying to find a work item number to post it in the room, if I put hash in front of it, it automatically turns into a link, is how do I know which item it is? Well, I can jump over here, to this task here, and in the page up here, just search for it. So if I search for local, you can see it runs a query, and then I'm getting that, and I can see the ID, and then I can go post it. It's not ideal, but it's a really easy way to find items quickly. Easier than searching inside Team Explorer, though you can do that as well. So I can go here in Studio, just zoom that in, and you can see I searched for local and it still found the item. So there's different ways to find work items depending on what role you're doing and if you're stuck in the web interface or you're using Studio. Most developers, by the way, will end up with multiple monitors and will have, or even on a single monitor, I'll just alt-tab between the browser and so forth. The chat notification in the room has a little audio beep that will happen, and you can turn that on and off as well. Wherever my audio indicator's gone. I think it might have been lost in my font size. All right, so collaboration's important. Source control. Source control. Hello, Git. Who's happy Git's in TFS now? Yes, 3-4 people. Wow. What do you guys use? Subversion? Source safe? TF version control? So TF version control prior to 2012 sucked, right? It blew chunks. The fact that it had that read-only lock on everything all the time meant you had to go and do the explicit checkout and so forth. Local workspaces in 2012 really improves that. So now I can go and edit things directly on the file system and not worry about having checked them out first and go, oh, I forgot to turn off that lock. You know, that whole process. Git improves things, again, depending on the way you work in teams, by letting developers have their own copy of source control and make own local branches. So they can branch themselves, do some experimentation on something separate from everyone else. They don't mess anyone else's code up. It's only when they push the code to the remote server that everyone else gets screwed up. So here we're looking at a project, Nancy project. This is as tough as it gets for a web application. Do you know you could build a web app in 3 lines of code with 3 pages? There it is. So if I run this page app, you can see I've got routes here. So there it is. Hello. It's exciting. And I can go to /home. And this is home. It's even excitinger. And demo, and that's, wow, pretty cool. Nice little framework for building simple applications. You can hook it up to view engines and everything else as well, so it hooks up to Razor. I've just dumped straight text because it's easier. But I might go down to here to say, this is yet another page with some changes, and I'll save that. And if I go over to here to my changes, you can see I've got a change here. I'm going to make a commit here, something, whatever else. Sorry? No code review. You code reviewed that, right? And then I'm going to push that to the remote server. So you can see that's pushing, and oh, hang on, there's changes on the remote server. Someone else has made some changes. I better pull those down, so I will do that. Do a pull, and you can see I'm not having to go to the command line here. So simple push and pull is quite okay in Studio if you're using Git, though I still recommend using command line for a bunch of options. So we've got that, I'm good, but I've got some conflicts. So I need to resolve the conflict. So again, similar kind of process. So there it is. Let's just do a compare of the files, and you can see I've jumped into the tool, and someone's put some HTML around this one and made some edits to the home page and so forth. Just to save time, I'm going to take the remote, and that's cool, and commit my merge, and commit, yep, good, and then I go here, I'm going to push that up to the server, done, okay? So Git is a valid and viable option for teams who do that. If you're someone who's a developer who often works offline as well, carry your notebook around, want to do a bit of work on the train to impress the boss, feel free. It's all there, it's ready to go. Okay, so what about code quality? So because I'm using, I'll just go back up here for a second. Because I am using Git for this project, I don't have code reviews here. There's no code review link in the Team Explorer, because that's tied to TF version control at this stage. That said, there's still options in the service to be able to do some form of lightweight code commenting or code reviews. So if I jump out back to the service and I go to the Home tab and I go code, I'll close that chat window. I go to code and I wait for the network. Do I click the button? That would help as well. And we sit here and talk amongst ourselves. There we go. So there's some changes. You can see I've done a few changes down here. Let's add. Let's go have a look at this particular commit. So I'm looking at a change here. I go, okay. I want to make a comment about this particular item. I can go click to add comment. I can simply go in, comment. Blah, 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 I give up. Save it, away we go. I will then see that there's notes about that. And I can do it at a line level, I can do it at a whole commit level, and so forth. As I'm doing that, we're actually seeing some notifications, by the way, over here in the chat channel, that people have been doing stuff. I've got some commits. Oh, and I've had a build that's run. That's exciting. We'll look at that later. It's not the perfect code review system. But then again, neither was the TFS 2012 one. That was a bit broken as well, because you'd request a code review, which was great in theory. Someone would pick that up, which is great. They could look at the items. They could do a review. Who used it, by the way? Anyone? A few people? The problem was, when they finished the review and sent it back to the original developer to do anything, the process stopped. You couldn't continue it. So a code review really is a two-way process. There's a lot of backwards and forwards. This is something you should improve. Okay, here's, I improved it. How's that? No, that's still bad. No, it's okay now. No, and, you know, there's this kind of to and fro. The code review, which is over the fence and back again, and that's it, doesn't really work. This at least is a way of doing it as well for Git, which isn't supported. And people can still see what's going on. I would expect that, given the team is pushing the web side of things, that this will be the one that gets a lot more love than the standard code review process at the moment. I'm not making any commitments on behalf of the team, by the way. I don't work for Microsoft. The opinions are my own, blah, blah, blah. but that's what I would expect. That's what I would hope for. And you can always hassle them on User Voice, visualstudio.uservoice.com. Go and put suggestions in if you want something improved. All right. Where do they live? They live in the TFS database. They're not in the Git repo. So they're in the TFS database, and there's a, I don't know what they've done under the hood to make it work, but there's some attached metadata. Same as the tags aren't actually directly on the work item, they're attached metadata. So it's kind of interesting where they're taking some of this stuff. All right, that's where we were at. Okay, so that's a bit of source control, a bit of code quality. What about testing? So we've got this little link up here says test. Yep. Testers in the room? Anyone? Scary. One person. Okay, so testers, anyone used MTM, by the way, Microsoft Test Manager, that horrible desktop client with the UI from the 80s? Yep, it's beautiful, isn't it? Okay, so the team has now provided a web-based interface. I can still run tests if I do the drop-down here using MTM. I can still run tests using the client. That will launch the thick client and will run this test case. But if I'm just doing lightweight web testing, for example, then I can simply do this. I can go run, and this is going to launch. Launch. Come on, don't fail me now. Do-do-do. Click run, run. Come on. Okay, this is good. Go network. I'm going to blame the network. Shall I do that? Run. Because if we try it again, that'll work. Okay, let's open the work item. Oops, let's open. Ah, yes. Please, you close the changes. Let's just open this first. So this is a test, usual test work item. We've got the various steps in here. We've got some data-driven tests. So I've got some pages that I want to test just to make sure they're all okay. And again, I'm going to come back here and I'm going to try this way instead. That way works. The mysteries. All right. Let's just drag that down a bit. Okay, so what we've got now is kind of like MTM in that we've got that little window that sits on the side of your screen, and then you've got your main desktop area for doing your testing of the application. So if I go and grab this and pull this out as another page and jump back to the other one, it says, here's some instructions. I've got test one, I've got iterations. I want to take this site and see that it works. So this is my Azure website where I've deployed it to. And I've got my TE 2013 websites, and I can see I've got a page, which is cool. So I might say that that particular test is okay, and then go to the next one, and then do /home, and so forth. And sure, the font's tiny, but I can also go create bug here. I think the fact that I'm zoomed in on my font's messing it up. It's a bug. And I can go and create a bug, and you can see it's tracked some information. Now, if you create a bug in MTM, it usually also captures system information and so forth, and you can do easy screenshots. You can't do that with the web client because it just doesn't have that feature. It can't get to the system info, for instance. So you won't see in here, in the system, any data at this stage. Tester would have to fill that in. Question? You're going to ask me a licensing question, are you? Okay, so yes, if you want to use Test Manager, you need to have a license for professional or for test professional, one of those two. The mysteries of how Microsoft does licensing are one of those things I've never managed to wrap my head around. So I just generally, because I'm MVP, I can get ultimate. So I kind of forget about licensing and just say, talk to your local reseller who will help you out with whatever it is. And then it's just easier because it's not my problem anymore. I'll just be honest. For other things with this, because it's free for 5 users, you've got access to the basic stuff. But as you can see, test is marked as being in preview. So if you have a look, I'll just close that, leave the page, and close that one. When you hover over this or when you do the test stuff, the little asterisk says it's in preview, which means it will probably become either a license thing or a charge thing, depending on what happens when they finally release the pricing model. Same as build will no doubt be charged, but I doubt it's going to be expensive because it's just going to be CPU time. Testing, I don't know what they'll do for that as well, but we'll see. All right, so where are we at? Code testing. So testing's cool. it's kind of handy for a lot of the testers who don't now need to install that MTM client on their desktops, which also makes the ops guys happy because they don't have to worry about pushing it out as part of the SOE or anything like that, or doing updates and so forth. You can still use the full client, obviously. You can still talk to TF service. So the full client will talk to the service just like Visual Studio does. And we can go from there. All right. So now at this point, jumping back, just to keep track of where we are on our roadmap. So we've done collaboration, we've done source control, we've done code quality, we've done testing. What about build and deployment automation? Now, anyone used Azure websites? Show hands, three people. Okay. So within Azure websites, there's an option to hook a website up to a Git repo and automatically deploy that site every time you check into the Git repository. Doesn't work with TFS. Of course not, because the Azure team decided that, no, we don't need to worry about that at the moment. Actually, I'm putting words in their mouth. And Scott Guthrie's doing the lock notes, so I better not abuse them too much, right? But it's not supported yet. If you go onto the site and you try and do a deployment, you can put in your TFS service account, it will only find TF version control repositories. It won't find the Git ones. So what's a developer to do? We want to do our deployment on build automation every time we do it, but what we want to do is we have to kind of mess around with our build definition. So I'll jump back here to Team Explorer, just so you can see what I'm doing. I'll go here to builds, and I have a build definition here, edit build definition. Can you see that? No, I probably should move the mouse. All right, in the process, I'm using, who's done TFS builds? A few of you guys, okay, so this is fairly familiar. The only thing that really needs to happen in here is that, and it's not gonna come up because I've used, okay. I'll show the 13 one. Basically, I've got a blog post explaining this. In your deployment of your MS build, you pass in some extra arguments. Basically say, deploy on build equals true. And then you've got to actually put a Visual Studio tool version in it so that the build servers in the hosted build pick up the right version of MS build and know how to deploy to Azure properly. If you don't do that, the build will run and it will pass, but the site won't get updated and you'll be scratching your head for a while and you end up with bald spots like this. It's not good. All right, so just come back here for a second. I'll show you one that I have done. And in the log, you'll see it's all compiled. I can view the log file, and it will come up in a second. Oh no, not you, don't go to that page. All right. Anyway, we're doing doing the final actions, and it's not showing in that particular log. But you get the idea. I'm sure you get the idea. Does the deploy. Look at the blog post. It's not hard. All right. So build and deployment's important. Do that. Trigger it. Again, I can do this. In here in the source settings, you'll see we've got the project we're building, and we're building off a particular branch. This is how we reference branches out of the Git repos. If I've got multiple repositories, because I can do that inside Git, I can select which repository I'm interested in. So we can do multiple repos, which is useful for one team project with multiple teams doing different stuff within that project. Then I'm saying, I want to build that particular one, and then do it on the hosted build controller or the 8.1 preview controller. It works on both. I've tried both of them. And then it will push up. So if I go and just to prove the fact, if I go here and change this and we add something. So we just add a new URL and we'll do P equals beep, 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 beep. It's exciting. Save it. All right, and I'll just shrink that down so I can see what I'm doing. Go over here to changes, and I will commit that, go to my commits, push that up to the server, and that will then go and trigger a build, and we'll be able to look at the site in a minute or two once it's done the build to actually see that things have happened. And just for fun, I'm going to leave this particular page open, and we'll see when the build's finished, and then we'll go have a look at the site. All right. So while that's happening, retrospectives. So we go through the sprint. We've done all our work. We now want to get to the end of the sprint and do a retrospective. It's really important before we do that, if we can, that we get feedback from our users. So within the service and within 2012 and onwards, there's been that feedback tool. Out of curiosity, who's used the feedback tool? Two people, three people. Okay, so not many use it. I would say definitely look at using this thing because it's a very, very useful tool. I'll go to my page over here, back to home. And on this front page, there's a little link here that says request feedback. If you click that thing, it's going to pop up a small wizard saying, please tell me what you want to do. So I'm going to ask the product owner to give me some feedback, and I want them to go to HTTP. I'll give them the URL to launch, te2013.azurewebsites.net. Use any browser you like, complete with spacing. All right, and then I want some feedback. Please check the pages. Don't worry about links yet because we're building first sprint or whatever else. And then I can preview what that's going to look like. And they're going to get an email that looks something like that, which will launch a tool. So I'm going to go, yes, please send that off. All right. So that will send an email. And my product owner over here has a very clear inbox. He's going to have that. And this just went beep at me. And I can see I've got a feedback request that's been created. And the build's finished. Awesome, good timing. All right.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you can ask a question while I press F5.
Can we change the email templates?
Nope.
Can we attach the image
screenshots? Nope, because this is the service. You can't do a lot of that sort of stuff. When the feedback request, it's pretty much a pro forma anyway. It says launch this link. Yes, come on, refresh. Send it through. People are desperately waiting. There we go. All right, so I'm good. I can install the feedback tool. If I haven't got that, I can start my feedback session. Because I'm running in private, that's not going to launch at the moment, so I'm just going to quickly grab this URL down the bottom here and run that and just hit the button. And that's going to launch the feedback client, like so, which will then let me play around with the application. So it says launch that app. I'm going to do that. Here it comes. Hello, that's cool. And then I want to provide feedback. So I'm going to do that. And I can do a few things. I can record screenshots, you know, drag a section. That's great. Record my voice as I'm doing it. So one of the things, especially around usability, that's quite handy is to get users to actually play with the application and record what they're saying and get them to talk through what they're doing. And you know, when you hear them swearing at the screen and all that sort of thing, you know that they've got some room for improvement potentially in your UX. So screen with voice or voice only and so forth. So you can see this one in particular is probably the best one. So you can see what they're doing with their movement. And you're going, well, why the hell are you clicking? What the link's right there. Look, just did. You watch the playback session. That's really amusing. But I do that. Put in some items and I say, it's kind of okay. I submit the feedback, submit and close, and that will then disappear. And our site's done. Okay, so, and then again, feedback response has been received. I can open the response. And that will open up and show me all the information that you would expect from TFS. This is some of the existing stuff, but we're doing it within the context of Scrum. We're trying to tighten the feedback loop. So in Scrum, your feedback loop is important. The shorter you make the feedback loop, the better. You want to be able to turn things around quickly so that if you do build the wrong thing, you know you've built it incorrectly as soon as possible. Traditional project development says, build the wrong thing, and in 18 months when you deliver it, you'll find out because that's the point where the users will say to you, that's not what I asked for. You know, and they'll have their sad faces on and they'll be pointing fingers and you'll be going, no, but that's what you said in the spec document. And of course, we all read the spec document the same way because it's in English. So we want that tight feedback loop. We love documentation. Love it. All right, so that's our feedback response. So we want to do this. We then move on to the sprint review itself. So in the sprint review, we're talking through what we did in terms of what we've built. So we've got the items, we've now built it, it's deployed on our test site, if nowhere else, if it hasn't made it to production yet, that's okay. And now we want to sit down and we want to do a review process. At this point, we would go back to that product backlog that we had before, and we would look at every item in the sprint. We don't do a demo. Most teams doing sprint reviews do them incorrectly. They do demos. It's like I'm doing here. They do a song and dance about how wonderful it is, and here's the new features, and isn't it great? That's wrong. If you're doing that, change your behavior. Sprint review is an inspection. Think of it like getting the pink slip for your car or 140-point safety inspection. You go through, and it's very boring, but you go through very methodically, item, 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 item. Open up each product backlog item, check the definition, check the descriptions, check the acceptance criteria one at a time, and very methodically go and show them. If you want to do a demo to sell something to the stakeholders and say how wonderful you are, get your product owner to do that outside of the sprint review. The sprint review is look at the items, make sure everything's right, because we want to make sure that we've met our definition of done. You've got one, right? I thought so. Have we met the definition of done? Have we done the code reviews? Can we show that the unit tests are here and that they run? Are the integration tests functional? Do they all pass? Are our performance metrics okay? Have we done our security checks? Have we done our documentation updates? Have we kept the wiki up to date? Have we da-da-da-da-da? Whatever it is on our definition of done, have we done all of those things? Because if we haven't, don't show it. It's not finished.
It's not that on each car that you are delivering. Don't you do that every time that you are delivering something?
Yes, you do. So if you're doing Scrum correctly, you do. I'm not going to ask the room who's doing Scrum correctly. Everyone's got room for improvement, right? So Scrum's kind of this spectrum. You can do Scrum and have plenty of room for improvement. You can do Scrum really well, and if you do, I'm impressed. There's very few teams who do Scrum really well, very few. It's a hard thing to do. It's easy to understand the basics of it. It's hard to master. So this is part of that. A lot of teams think they're doing Scrum fairly well, and they do their retrospectives, their reviews, and it really is just a smoke and mirrors demo. And the product owner looks at it and thinks it's finished. They don't know that under the hood, the thing's a complete mess, that it's, blue tack and bits of string and MacGyver's happy in the background. Question again down the front, and then I'll get one here. No, they can definitely be there, but then don't expect them to go for a song and dance. If they turn up, they're coming to inspect. Yeah. If you buy a new car, what do? You take it for a test drive and you get a demo of it, and generally you buy it. If you're getting a second-hand car, what do? You take it for a test drive, it feels okay, but then what do? Then you do your revs check, then you get a mechanic if you're wise to go and have a look at it, and try and spot the things that you can't spot because you're not an expert, so that you don't buy a lemon. Unless, of course, it's your daughter's first car, in which case you want to buy a lemon because it's part of the hazing ceremony that you give your children. then you can get the call at 2 a.m. when they've broken down. there was another question. Was there another question? Nope. Okay. All right. Retrospective. Okay, so again, in the retrospective, what are we going to be doing? Where does TF Service help us in the retrospective? Even if we're talking about how we build things and how we work as a team, how does TF Service help? Helps a little bit in that we have those tracking things. If you remember, we looked back at the backlog. We can look at our sprint burn down. How did we go this sprint? If we've just finished the sprint, what do we talk about here as a team? We were going really well, and then that happened. Why did that happen? What's going on? How do we understand how to prevent this happening again? Or where did we fall over and trip up and stop ourselves being quite so efficient? We can also look at, if I go to my backlog view, our velocity. So I click this little one here, and I can see over the last number of sprints, my team's velocity, their rate of progress. And I can see as a team, we started off well, but now we're kind of tanking, and we see this downward trend. What's going on with that? Generally, if you're sitting in a team and you start seeing a downward trend in your velocity, it's going to be because of technical debt, generally. You're going to start having developers complaining about how complex your application is to work with, the application they wrote. And they're going to be complaining about it's too hard and it's too big and they don't know where to find things and it's their own problem. So as a team, you need to be talking about this because you need to be improving this stuff. So you're using this as indicators to help you in your retrospectives to improve and get better. You can also look at the feedback that you've received from people. We've got feedback from the feedback tool from various people, and this is what they're saying, and we can see on average their star ratings are starting to drop, or they're starting to give us feedback with frowny faces in it and so forth. This is not a healthy situation. All right. So that's the Scrum side of things. Let's have a quick talk about Kanban. So Kanban, for those who don't know, is this very lightweight process. Did I say very enough to get the point across? So Scrum's lightweight. Kanban's like paper thin. You can see through it. It's based on lean principles, and the lean principles come from a manufacturing perspective. The idea that in a factory environment, when we're producing product, we want to minimize our work in progress, because anything we work on that doesn't get sold is waste. It costs us money. If we don't think about our end-to-end process and we build up a lot of parts along the way, we end up with stockpiles of items mid-process. It costs us, especially if we change our direction. The same happens in software. I want to think about my process in terms of development. What are the stages I go through? And where am I bottlenecking my development efforts? And where am I building up too much work in progress? And Kanban helps us visualize that. So we focus on the end-to-end throughput. It's a little different from Scrum in that it focuses on flow. We generally have this pile of stuff to get done, the backlog, and we flow that through the development process. In Scrum, what we're really talking about is batching work. You know, the whole sprint concept is batching work. We take, a 2 to 4 week period and we batch a chunk of work for that period of time and then we rinse and repeat, another batch. Works well for project work, but what if I'm doing support work where it's largely ad hoc? It can become a bit more difficult to do because we don't have that planning horizon to work with. We have a shorter visibility. A few things to note. Kanban doesn't talk anything really about continuous improvement. Doesn't really talk about explicit planning. Kanban is really the Japanese term for task board. It is just a task board. That's all it is at its core. If I don't think about continuous improvement, how do I get better? Now, those who do Kanban will say, well, you should be doing it. Yeah, you should be doing it, but when? If we're on a process where it's all about flow, where's that discrete point to stop and think? The retrospective. We don't have it. Which means also, because it's about flow, we can apply it to any process we feel like, including the crappiest processes in the world. But now, because we've got a board and we've got tasks, hey, we're agile. We're doing complete rubbish, but we're doing it agile now because we've got a board. Don't kid yourselves. You're not agile if you can't respond quickly to your customer. It's not agile because we have a board. So think about that. I'm quite happy for people to use Kanban for BAU kind of work, being, you know, bug fixing and maintenance and so forth. You know, that ad hoc kind of support stuff that happens. No problem at all. What I would prefer is that BAU doesn't mean bug fixing. I'd prefer that BAU means delivering great software. You can do BAU with Scrum. So feel free to use that. So if we're doing largely ad hoc work, what do we do? So task board, this is really it. This is the essence of Kanban, task board. I have items, they go through various states, and I have a work in progress limit. I use that to tell me when I'm overloading effort in a particular area. Okay, so if I see myself overloading something, I want to focus on that. I also want to think about cycle times. How long does it take me to get through each of the stages? And more importantly, how long does it take me to get from here to here? Anything I can do to reduce that cycle time is important. All right, so let's jump across to here and go have a look at our Kanban tools inside the service. If I go back to my backlog view here, which I currently happen to be on, I go to board and I see states. And you can see I've got these numbers here, 0 of 5, 3 of 5. I'm already set for Kanban with work in progress limits. In fact, I can come in here, I can customize my columns. So I can say, you know what, in my development process, I have new and approved, and then the team pulls the item in, and then within that, we do crazy stuff like, you know, code and test. We can add these columns, and I can say that I've only really got two developers in my team, and I've got one tester. So they're my particular limits. I want to make sure that no developer does what some developers do, which is work on five things at once. If you're a dev and you work on more than one thing at a time, you're doing it wrong. If you're like some of my great friends who like to start a whole lot of stuff but have trouble finishing, this is going to hurt. Because this makes you finish something before picking up something new and shiny and exciting. And I can tie these things to work item states. So I can say when a bug, which is the top line, or a product backlog item, which is the bottom line, enters a particular state, that changes it to whatever the workflow, the work item state is. So these aren't, these states here that I'm adding, sorry, code and test, aren't actually changing the work item workflow, the process. So if I go into the work item definition itself and open up the states, you won't see code or test there. This is purely metadata for managing the board. So I go OK, and you can see now I've got these items, and if I move that across to code, and I move that across to code, and that across to code, you can make that out, hopefully, that that's gone red, and we have a work in progress limit being exceeded. TF service won't stop you doing that, because there are times when you want to exceed your limits, but it's effectively a warning to stop you doing that. Okay? Okay. Someone bury that body. All right, so that's where we're at with Kanban, and that, oh, not quite done. There is one other thing here. This little diagram up here, cumulative flow diagram, showing us how we're progressing in terms of number of work items and what states those work items are in. You can see code and test have turned up. Pretty cool. So we can track that. We can see how long things are taking. We can look at time this way to try and get a feel for our cumulative flow, but it's not really there yet in the service. This is more just the number of items in a particular state over time. So it's useful to get a feel for it, but it's not going to give you that full end-to-end flow at this point. I'm sure it'll turn up, but it's not there just yet. And with that, you guys have achievement unlocked. You've made it to the end of Tech Ed. There's a lock note to go, but just a few things quickly. TF service, if you use it, will be updated every 3 weeks. You probably know that already. It's free for 5 users. Will be free for 5 users forever until they change their mind. You do need MSDN or CALS to use it once it becomes a paid service. You don't get work item customization because it's in the service. It's a hosted thing. There's a whole lot of reasons for that, mainly around upgradability and maintainability of the service itself. You have to, if you want SharePoint or reporting services, you won't be able to use that. You'd want an on-premise version there. And you have to use Microsoft accounts to log in, which means no AD integration at this stage. If you want those, use the on-premise version. The on-premise one comes out pretty soon with Visual Studio 2013. So we, you know, Windows 8 comes out in October. I would expect it would be around then. And if you want to migrate from TF service to on-premise, it hurts. It really hurts. You have to use the TFS integration platform, and it's akin to putting needles in your eyes. I don't recommend it except to enemies. The other way, same problem. That will change, as a note, that will change because they've got to offer some way of getting your data out of the system. So expect that to change, but I haven't seen what they're talking about yet. And apart from that, we are done. Obviously, feel free to ask questions. My contact details are there. Do your evals so you can win some gear, which is nice. Play with some resources. And thank you very much. Enjoy Tech Ed. Get yourselves to the lock note. You've got 10 minutes. Timing's good.
Thank you, Richard.
Pleasure.